Chris in Tennessee, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Welcome to the Revere Radio Network, the worldwide home of free speech. My name is Chris. This show is called Nowhere to Run. You can go to our website, which is conspiracyclose.com/nowhere to run. Please forgive me for the sound quality of the show. I'm broadcasting this from my laptop microphone, and it's just a little tiny hole there. But we'll probably be back to the original setup next week, so try to look past the sound quality if at all possible. Let's see here. I just did a show, and I'm basically going to just split these up into two different ones, so because this is what I've been studying about pretty much all week. So but the stuff that I just did a show on, which was kind of came up later, I wanted to separate them if possible. So this one is going to be about Michael Tesserian, his connections to the secret societies, and the interesting company that he keeps and stuff like that. I did the show The Many Mistakes of Michael Tesserian a few weeks back, and I got a lot of interesting response to that. And I would want to suggest that show, nor what I'm trying to do now, is about nitpicking things that he is saying wrong. I've tried to point out, I say wrong things all the time. I try to do the corrections thing before every show. I've been doing it for, you know, as long as I've been doing the show. And I mean, it's just we just study in the area where there's just a lot of disinformation, so invariably there'll be a reason to retract the things that you say. So I don't really look finding his mistakes that he may have said and then like hold him up like, aha, I have him. He said something that's not right. Let's whatever. Because I think what I showed in that show was that there had to be an agenda other than just getting a few things wrong here and there. It's a really obvious agenda. We need to at least consider the possibility that this is all planned. Now, the guy says a ton of stuff. I mean, he's been trained, as far as I can tell, to do what he's doing since he was 13 years old. So, you know, I mean, he's got a lot of knowledge, and so it comes across as just like, oh, he must be right. He's like the smartest guy in the world. Of course he's right about everything. And I think that he would probably, I don't know what he would say about it, about being right about everything. But anyway, so a lot of interesting things happened. A lot of people contacted me that were like the highest posters on his forum, and a lot of people that had left his forum for various reasons, very interesting reasons. I'm not really going to get into any of that stuff. I don't think that this is a character thing, unless some of the character things were suggesting. What I'm trying to show you here is that there is a very serious agenda here, and it's huge. It's all over this truth movement. And it's a very few key people that are selling us the Masonic dogma for dummies, just making sure that the people waking up from 9/11 don't get to think too much, and we get to let them know, oh yes, you're right, isn't everything so bad? 9/11 was an inside job. Come over here, we're all friends, and then, you know, slam this easily acceptable agenda, which people will buy because they've been so hurt by the ridiculous concept of this false church picture that's dangled in front of everybody, that's just so apostate and wrong, and the Catholic ideas and all this pagan stuff is not what Christianity is, but it's just been so propagated to be this that it's been the target. It's exactly like a straw man that they do use for 9/11 hit pieces and stuff. They build up the straw man, which is all the pagan rituals of the Catholic Church, which was, you know, created to for that reason to infiltrate Christianity because it was getting out of hand. And so Rome said, okay, we'll, you know, if you can't beat them, join them kind of thing. So that's a straw man argument. Most of the things that people like Tessarian and Maxwell say, and I got a really interesting quote from Maxwell that I think is a little telling. I'll play a little later. But it's a straw man. They build up this big, mean entity called the Catholic Church and show how it, you know, all these crusades and all these, you know, killing and awful, terrible pagan things that it's done. And then knock it down and say, look, we knocked it down. It's Christianity we just knocked down. When in fact, they just knocked down what they themselves, not necessarily implicating anybody as being a part of the Catholic Church, but, you know, built up. So that's an interesting premise that we have to understand just in general, that that's a huge part of what these debunkers do. But it's bigger than this. It's a lot bigger than this. Okay, so one of the things I wanted to talk about was Tessarian and his connections to the Rose Croix, or the French pronunciation I think we're going to use here, but it's the Rose Cross, so we'll just say that, but it's spelled Croix, like Croix. But let's just look into his Rosicrucian connections, and he admit, you know, it's in all the bios, and it kind of is like one of their things. It's just like right there in front of your face. It's just in all the bios that he's. I don't think it says out and out that he is a Rosicrucian. It's like he's affiliated with it. But let's look into it. Does it mean that it's not that big a deal, that, you know, it's just a loose affiliation with it and he's not really bound to the membership of it? And if he is, I mean, it doesn't really mean he's part of the Illuminati. I mean that would be stupid, of course. It's like, not that there's, you know, anything inherently wrong with that, but let's look at the history of it. Let's look at what is really being done and said by them, and let's see if that adds up to anything that we should be concerned about by somebody saying the things that Tessarian says. Let's see if it's transparent at all. Because I think that it is, and I think that if we just had somebody tell us, you know, make it clear, then it would be enough to make us suggest all the other things that are wrong that he's saying is wrong for a reason, let's say. And again, it's like the Zeitgeist thing. There's a very, very short list of people that will claim the things that Zeitgeist says, and Zeitgeist quotes them all in their references. Again, citing not one single ancient document that proves anything that they say, except for the King James Bible. They just instead have to quote people like Jordan Maxwell and Akira S. and Gerald Massey. These people always come up in this, and everybody just seems to think it's so just the oldest news in the world, that all these Christ figures were a part of ancient history. What if you look at it, not even the people that actually believe this, the Masonic and Rosicrucian belief systems, they really, for the most part, don't even actually believe that it's history. They believe it's a mystery school symbolism thing. Like Plutarch and all that stuff, that was just, and even the Mithraic mystery schools, that was symbolism in a mystery school. They didn't really even believe it happened. They didn't really even believe what they say with Horus actually happened, or that there was any evidence to support it. But see, we have gone so far, and it's possibly the fluoride, it's possibly I don't know what, where we just stop questioning people when it comes to bashing Christianity. That's as simple as it gets. If somebody says anything at all about negative to Christianity, it's automatically true before any other evidence comes to the contrary. Anybody that says anything against it is obviously, you know, a deluded Christian. It's like some kind of Gestapo kind of crazy Nazi stuff. I mean, we have to figure this out real quick. Anyway, let me read this thing. I think it's very interesting. It was a guy that must have posted on a different forum before it was moved. I've looked around the internet for this person, and I hope that if somebody knows who did this, that they can contact him, because I really want to thank him and even have him on the show for doing this. But this is a guy who did a really, really good article about Tessarian and the Rose Cross and the Gnostic and the New Age all connected, is the name of the article. Tessarian, Rose Croix, Gnostics, and the New Age all connected? ? And it was got by a guy called True Soul Ja. This is a repost of this. I've saved this thing, and I will put a link to the website of this forum. I really encourage you to go through it, because it's mostly links and it's a lot of images of different symbols and things that you really have to just soak in. If you are concerned about this, please go check this out. It is at illusionsforum.net/phpbb3. You'll have to go to the website. It's conspiracyclothes.com/nowhere to run. I'll post a link to this. Okay, well, he starts off here by saying that, you know, he was surprised to see what all this stuff turned up when he started looking into Tessarian's connections, and he was saying that he actually really likes the guy. He wasn't expecting all this information to come out and stuff. And then he, let's continue there. He says, first I want to show, where to start? Oh yeah, it's like all research. It means you have to read it all to get the big picture, so please do it. Like I said, Tessarian was a starting point. So let's take his bio on his site. And then he notes all the people that are mentioned as, different people that he was associated with, different people his mother was associated with, and then his mentors and so on. I think the first bit here is the people he's talking about, those people that his mother, who was a psychic, and I can't seem to find anything on her. I was just trying to see what, it says she was famous and in Ireland, on an Irish television to be a regular psychic on Irish television or something like that. So, I mean, I just wanted to see what she was about, what kind of things she was talking about, just to see if it gave any clues or whatever. But I couldn't find anything about that. But these people that I think he's mentioning here are people that were associated with his mother. And it says, first I want to show how everyone named there is elite, as in bloodline, secret society, celebrity or academic, or simply altogether. And they are all part of a network or operate within this network, which, of course, is Brotherhood controlled, every part of it. Yep, it's just another face on the seven-headed dragon called Rose Cross Reformation, whatever. It's the counter-movement, the artists, the Gnostics, New Age, the healers, it's all good people who talk fancy stuff all day long and are out to awake and educate us. Or could it be a bit different than it first meets the eye? So let's start with Tessarian's family, friends, and especially mentors. Shirley MacLaine. Goes through and he gives links to all these people, which is really interesting. Ed Mitchell. Well, let me stop there. Let me go back to Shirley MacLaine quick, because I did something with that. Well, it says here on his website that his Himalayan-born mother was a well-loved, internationally recognized clairvoyant whose affiliates included Barbara Max Hutter, Sir George Trevelyan, Jerry Jampolsky, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, Shirley MacLaine. And so I actually emailed Shirley MacLaine and said, it says you were affiliated with this woman. I was wondering if you knew who this woman was. They sent me back an email. This is an edit. I just am editing this back in because I just received this email. And it says, Dear Chris, Shirley is not an affiliate of any kind and doesn't even recall meeting this person. We have asked this Michael to remove her name from his site. Thank you and happy holidays. Okay, well, there you go. Lee Corboisier, who he says, which was one of the architects of the UN headquarters, Ken Critchlow, and these are all people that his grandfather had association with, Tara Singh, the renowned philosopher, author, and teacher of the Theosophic Tome, A Course in Miracles. His grandfather taught a course on the course in miracles. He was the intimate friend of J. Krish Marathi, the world teacher, Swiss architect, Lee Corbusier, the UN HQ guy, and all these other names. Eleanor Roosevelt, which oddly, Eleanor Roosevelt was the same person, I think, that he said his mother. No. Anyway, he played a key role in Reverend Paul Solomon's Fellowship of the Inner Light, one of the first true American mystery schools. He now heads up the Foundation of Los Angeles. Michael was born and raised in Ireland and grew up learning metaphysics from Krishmarati, Reverend Paul Solomon, and Peter Ballin. Okay, so these are people that were training him from a very early age, from Paul Solomon, the guy who, the mystery school, first American mystery school guy, who you can look at his logos, and whatnot, his philosophies and all that stuff. He's very clearly Rosicrucian, but, don't believe me. Go check this out for yourself. It's not too hard to figure out. Let's keep on going down the line. He talks about the people with associations with this Sari Baba, who, is a very interesting character. Obviously, some kind of false guru. He talks a lot of fancy stuff, or shall I say vomit, since I can't hear it anymore. He says, there's only one religion, the religion of love. There's only one caste, the caste of humanity. There's only one language, the language of the heart. There's only one God. He's omnipotent. And he says, does that look brotherhood like a brotherhood front or what? Referring to the one religion, one world, one everything, which you'll find a lot of in the Rosicrucian overall presentation, have to do with a one world religion and a one world government. And you can look at what the Rosicrucians say that their mission is, what they're doing, what kind of things that they have done. We'll just kind of look into this piece by piece. So it gives a lot of very interesting links to this Baba character. He says, what a role model. Look how spiritual he lives. Real basic. And shows this ridiculous, like, theme park thing that he lives in. Have a look at what the ex-followers have to say about the living gods, i.e. Baba. Also have a look at his logo. I mean, it's rose, you know, one world religion brought to you by the Rose Cross. I mean, it's obviously promoting the unification of all religions, and it looks very, and, you know, the symbolism is Rosicrucian, which you'll learn a lot of that as we go down here. It shows more things from the Rosicrucians and how they like to point that idea and the one world religion and all the different symbolism. By the end of this article, if you read it and see all the pictures, you'll know a lot more about this idea. He goes through a few more people: Barbara Max Hubbard, Alan Chadwick, President Nehru, Miss Roosevelt, Edgar Mitchell of theopostical.net. He says of Edgar Mitchell, he says, recommended by the Theosophical Society, like Krishnamurti, Sai Baba, Dalai Lama, etc., the whole gang of spiritual teachers or squad of the One World Religion team. The Theosophical Society was founded by Blavatsky, by the way, who claimed to be in contact with the hidden masters like Crowley or good old Hitler. And you'll find with Tessarian that he is such an apologist for Aleister Crowley or and Blavatsky. I mean, he's basically just falling all over himself when they come up. Here, I'll play a real quick clip what he says about Aleister Crowley and how he was just not understood for what he was. You know, and then he gets real mad because a Christian's asking him this question, and he's like, I don't want to debate this with you. You think that you just take it out of context and whatnot. Even if you took this out of context, though, I mean, just logically speaking, you are apologizing for something that is very clearly a huge part of this New World Order agenda. I mean, people have spent a lot of time implicating Aleister Crowley as a major player in this New World Order game. And here is this guy defending the hell out of this guy. Here, listen to him real quick.
That I don't know anything about, but I can certainly tell you that those quotes that have been taken from the book Magic in Theory and Practice have been totally misinterpreted. This is a case in point I was just talking to you about, Doug, is that people take one little line from Magic in Theory and Practice about the child sacrifices and so on without even printing the whole passage. People need to go to that area of the book. In fact, they need to go to the book and read it about the incredible, beautiful, the spirituality of that man and of that book have yet to be brought out. They pick on one little diatribe. He was addressing in that book false magicians. The quote is actually directed not to the ordinary reader, because he was a magician. He printed his books for his own magical society and for other people practicing the occult arts. And he also knew that a bunch of maniacal, black magician type people were following him around and misinterpreting his works. These people are always having that problem. And when he wrote those pieces, he was addressing these people because that's what they wanted to hear. And if you read the footnotes to those passages, it says, and anyone who goes and believes what I've just said and does this is an idiot. It'd be like today, somebody saying something on TV with a sort of, tongue-in-cheek type of way. Now, people always, bash Crowley. My God, that man, we have people in power today who dwarf the kind of, if he was, malign, my goodness, what we have today with these people's champions doing infinitely worse. So we need to do our homework there. Again, he was a man who had some very, pernicious parts to his personality. But so does a lot of other people. So do the people ruling the world today.
And please don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that he is doing this by him even just suggesting that Crowley was decent is, somehow wrong. I don't think that's not what I'm trying to get at here. I'm just saying that, that there's a lot more to Crowley than just that one quote. I mean, he quoted a lot of things saying his specific agenda. I mean, you got to take a lot of stuff out of context, not just the child sacrifice bit. You can have that if indeed the footnotes say that or whatever. We still got a long way to go in making him a great man and his spirituality being beautiful, especially considering the New World Order connections that this guy has. The fact that he's a Rosicrucian, or I think he was the Order of the Golden Dawn, and, you know, we'll see later how that ties into Rosicrucians. It's important connection, considering, you know, he at least admits to it. Okay, now this guy goes down the line. I'm trying to do this quick because this is such a long thing. Kubler-Ross, he's talking about it, gives the link to her. She talks about a lot of things I vibe with, but when you look at the Sayyid Baba speeches, you'll note that he says a lot of things I vibe with, too. I mean, overuse the word love and freedom and self-empowering, and pretty much everyone will vibe with it. That's the idea. Check her site. There's some subtle hints that she's Rose Cross, like the Zeus statue. Rose Cross are big time into Greek gods. Also, check her icons, Rose Cross, as you'll see shortly. But for now, be skeptic and keep on reading. He goes into Jerry Jampolsky, who is a psychiatrist, formerly of the faculty at University of California. He says something here that's not right. He says, A Course in Miracles was written by Tara Singh, Tessarian's grandfather. That's not true. He wrote a book about A Course in Miracles and taught A Course in Miracles and was very involved and integral in its early days, but he did not write it. So he is wrong there. And he gives a link to Tara Singh higher here. I don't know if that's the same Tara Singh. I know that there's a master Tara Singh, and then there's this guy who started the Joseph Plan Foundation, who I believe is Tessarian's grandfather, the Joseph Plan Foundation guy. Let's see here. Okay, keeping on here, it says he received a lot of awards, one of them being the Order of British Columbia. He was an artist and an author, even an activist, as you will see alone. That does not speak for him being a Rose Cross, or he's saying it does, as for the fact that people close to him were, and Tessarian is a Rosicrucian. I don't see his point in saying that his grandfather was Rosicrucian, although the connections to the Paul Solomon thing, as we'll see later, is really weird, and the J. Krishnamurti and everything. Jiddu Krishnamurti was very important. This is the guy that he says his mom went to one of this guy's schools. I think that somehow who Tessarian is, why he was trained, has something to do with this connection here. So I think this is important. And it's all a bit wrapped up into this guy somehow. It was friends of his grandfather. I have no idea who his father is. Maybe it was Jordan Maxwell. I don't know. But I have no idea who this J. Krishnamurti was. Sorry, I'm not really saying it's Jordan Maxwell, but, you know. Anyway. Born of a middle-class Brahmin priest, it was recognized at the age of 14 by the Theosophist Annie Besant and C.W. Ledbetter as the coming world teacher, and proclaimed to be the vehicle for the reincarnation of Christ in the West and of Buddha in the East. Mr. Besant adopted the boy and took him into England, where he was educated and prepared for his coming role. Okay, now this is important. This is J. Krishnamurti, who was buddy-buddy with Tessarian's grandfather. And somebody, these two people of the Theosophical Society, remember, that's Aleister Crowley and Blavatsky. Now, two people tried to recruit this guy, this Krishnamurti, and say he was going to be the new Christ and everything. And they educated him and prepared him for his coming role, or programmed, he says. Now, that's very important, I think. When we look at what has happened to Tessarian. He was also made head of a newly formed worldwide religious organization, the Order of the Star of the East, in 1911. But in 1929, after many years of questioning himself, he dissolved the order, repudiated its claims, and returned the assets given to him for its purpose. Out of town, out of his own spiritual, quote, process he experienced from 1922 onwards, he declared, "Truth is pathless. Truth is a pathless land, and you cannot approach it by any path whatsoever, by any religion or sect. Truth being limitless, unconditioned, unapproachable by any path whatsoever, cannot be organized, nor should any organization be formed to lead or to coerce people along any particular path. My own concern is to set humanity absolutely unconditionally free. Man cannot come to it through any organization, through any creed, through any dogma, priest, or ritual, not through any philosophic knowledge or psychological technique, but has to find it through some understanding of the contents of his own mind, through observations and not through intellectual analysis or introspective dissection. In 1984, he spoke to nuclear scientists at the National Laboratory Research Center at Los Alamos, New Mexico, USA. David Bohm, Ph.D., the quantum physicist and friend of Einstein, recognized in Krishnamurti's teaching parallels with his own revolutionary theories of physics. This led to many years of dialogue between the two men, which helped form a bridge between the so-called mysticism and science. Other scientists found his discussions of the time thought and death to be thought-provoking. Okay, the reason this is really, really crazy is that this J. Krishnamurti guy also had schools, and he mentions that his mother, the mysterious psychic I can't find, went to one of J. Krishnamurti's schools. Okay, that's a little interesting, you know, maybe, I don't know, but apparently this Annie Besant and C.W. Ledbetter, you know, they have the power to determine if somebody's going to be the coming world teacher and proclaim to be the reincarnation of Christ and then set him out trying to teach him all the things that he's going to need to know. And the guy, apparently, for whatever reason, maybe he was part of the plan, maybe not, but he says, hey, whoa, I don't want to be Jesus, you know, I don't think that people can do it like this, whatever. I don't know if that was him or what, but he apparently didn't want to be Jesus, so he rejected it, or they rejected him, I don't know. But, and then you have this J. Krishnamurti in 1984 talking with the Los Alamos people in New Mexico and the quantum physicists and friends of Einstein and stuff. You know, this starts to get into a lot of the weirdness. I mean, think about Crowley, who was all involved in the whole NASA thing with the Jack Parsons and the Moonchild and all that stuff. I mean, Crowley not himself, but like, you know, all that whole theosophical stuff came through them. I mean, there's some weirdness going on there, especially when you consider Tessarian's history. I mean, his grandfather was friends of Krishnamurti. You know, it's very possible, and this is my contention, this is what I was looking for in the first place, this is why I was so astounded, that Tessarian, being who he is, I mean, there's no doubt he is very, very knowledgeable, very much a genius, and it just seems to me that it just seems too... I don't know, like he's been trained for this. And I would say some things about that, but I'll just keep on going here. He established, about Krishnamurti guy here. He said he established foundations in India, Europe, and the United States with a defined role of protecting the teachings from being distorted and of disseminating his work. And it gives some links, and it says, by the way, Krishnamurti Foundation is managed by white boys. I wonder what that tells us. They do, in this link, look a little brotherhood, but then he says, and just listen to what he says. You can totally vibe with him, but in my opinion, he's part of the network bringing you the great truth of don't bother with the outside world, Illumis, and just look inside you, because that's the only way to change the mess. Yeah, or be passive while the NWO kicks in. The world teacher, why doesn't the ADL doesn't fuck with him? Or why do the Illuminis don't try to frame him? Blah, 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 blah. I don't really see that argument so much. Why doesn't the ADL bust a guy for calling himself a world teacher? I don't think that that's important. But now let's go to his mentors, and I think this is interesting. It says, Michael was born and raised in Ireland and grew up learning metaphysics from Krishnamurti, Reverend Paul Solomon, and Peter Boleyn. Growing up around leading free thinkers and mystery school creators, he was under pressure to find his own authentic voice rather than becoming dependent on the systems and influences of others. He had honored his pedigree by dedicating his life to the deepest research concerning the seminal metaphysical sciences, and unlike so many, he believes in honoring the work and the names of his mentors. Intuitive since birth, he was introduced to the tarot at age 11 through Reverend Paul Solomon's premier mystery school, the Fellowship of the Inner Light Movement, and learning of its profound effects on human intuition and its value and as an empowerment tool, committed his life to bringing tarot into the lives of others. He has been affiliated with the Paul Solomon Foundation of Virginia, the Rosicrucian Order, the Naz Habaki Sufi Order, and has taught Indigo children at the New Age Academy in Berkeley, and is a frequent guest of Seeing Beyond and Kest and the Bay Area's leading metaphysical radio programs. Okay, let's start with Boleyn. Boleyn Tarot. He gives a link here to Boleyn's site. He says, he's quoting here, I think, the guide to the Mayan tarot deck, Peter Boleyn, the painter of the Ixhultin Tarot Deck has written a book called About the Tarot and the Mayan Indians, Viewing the World. This is a very relevant book that deals with the problems of our times. Although the approach is new and deals with the American knowledge, it will serve all tarot decks regardless of their origin. The reader journeys with the Fool towards the impeccability of the sorcerer, and each step along the way clearly defined. The graphics alone are so spellbinding that even if you are not interested in the Mayas or the tarot, there is something in this book for you. It gives another link. It says, it is obvious where Michael learned the tarot from. Nothing suspicious so far, but for the common sense reasoning that all this knowledge comes from the Brotherhood Network, especially the Rose Cross. They just call it the mystery schools. But right there, all dependent and teach the truth despite the Brotherhood effects prevent that. Or do they? We'll see. But first let's have a look at Solomon, big time mentor of Tessarian. And Michael still pushes Solomon's info, so to suggest a breakup would be, well, wrong. Paul Solomon. Check his bio. It's elite from start to finish. He's too pushing this inner light. Fancy stuff. Looks like a network, global and fast-growing as well. And if you look at the structure, it's pure brotherhood. He gives two links here. He recommends Tessarian, whom he calls a master soul. And by the way, Solomon was a meta-human, you see. Go and read about Baba, Krishnamurti, Solomon, and yeah, even Tessarian, and they're all better humans than we are. They're all masters who bring us truth. Funny how they get all that money for setting up a worldwide network of schools, temples, etc. I do wonder where they get it from. Plus, where they get their knowledge from. Couldn't have something to do with their elite upbringing? They all got educated from a very young age onwards. You may want to read Springmeier's Deep Insights. Yeah, I know he doesn't write that fancy stuff, but his info might help to understand some things. And then he says, anyway, check out the logo of the Paul Solomon Foundation. And you'll find out later. And he gives a few examples of why that's Rose Cross. And he says, any similarities? And shows a few other examples. You'll see this all throughout the post. Do I see a lamp there? Well, let's better look at the assassins and how they too connect with the Rose Cross. Symbols don't lie, by the way. Ask Tessarian. Read this link. It also makes a Sufi connection. Wait, didn't Tessarian say he was affiliated with the Rose Cross and Sufis? Yeah, of course. He is, since they're the same, really. And he goes into this connection with the Islamic Sufis and makes the lamp connection here. Symbolically as well, but you really got to read about the Sufis and their connections to the Rose Cross. As you read through the stuff, the links here about what the Rosicrucians believe and what the Sufis and stuff believe, you'll start to get this idea of exactly the premises that Tessarian's saying. Not always the Atlantis and the aliens and everything else, but the general concepts are all being played out here, and it's also obvious that they don't. I mean, like the whole thing about the Rosicrucians. Part of it was that, well, one version of their history was that their leader was converted by Mark, of the Gospels Mark, and at that point merged it with the Egyptian mystery schools. I mean, that's Gnosticism at its core, and it's telling you right there that even the Horus Jesus similarities were never even supposed to be real. They were all just a merging of it. And so you have a lot of this stuff that people think is so true in history. It's like, oh, didn't you know Horus and Jesus were the same thing? Yeah, I know that you can type into Google Horus and Jesus and have a lot of people tell you that. But you can't go to the Egyptian Book of the Dead and find that. And you can't go to any other accounts or hieroglyphs of Horus and find that. You have to go via the mystery schools, and they will tell you that. And you go to Plutarch, and he will tell you that. It's Gnosticism mixed with this elitist stuff. The Rosicrucians have a very unique history. You do need to look into it. The Sufis are a part of that. Let's continue. And he's a member of both, he says. Or at least he's affiliated with both. Let's see. And he goes on, he says, in my opinion, you don't need to check the logo to see that the Rose Cross stands behind Solomon and his foundation. All you have to do is read some books written by Rosicrucians for Rosicrucians. Very, very interesting. Let's say, if I would put the name Tessarian on most of the forum, if I would have put the name Tessarian on it, most of the forum would vibe with it. But you can all see that for yourself soon. By the way, Michael's articles on metaphysics, etc., are featured in his The High Window column of the Psychic Reader, the official organ of the Berkeley Psychic Institute of California. Wait, let's check the logo of Berkeley, shall we? And again, roses and stuff. BerkeleyPsychic.com. Oh, wait, just another coincidence. Nothing to worry about. Gnostics Rock. And if you're wondering what I'm reading from, I'll just go ahead and link you to... I'll put a link to this on the website, which is conspiracyclothes.com/nowhere to run. And it'll be on the show notes section of this show, which will be 12507. And there's two shows on 12507, but you'll be able to find which one it is. And just click on that link and you'll see what I'm referring to. Wait, let's look into the founder of Berkeley as well. God gave you the right to know yourself. What we find at Berkeley Psychic Institute is the man's pursuit of his grace. How does one find God's love if he doesn't know the inside of his own divine being? As a spirit expresses himself through a body, he finds that the total value of his body is reassessed and that it adds up to his personal grace. And that's from Dr. Lewis S. Bostwick. Wow, more fancy stuff. By the way, he's the founder of the Church of Divine Man. Ready for a logo check? He gives links. Haha, you couldn't make this stuff up. What a big surprise. It's a rose. It's the rose as for Rosicrucians. Again, network anyone? And another example of the, quote, church within. It's another symbol showing the merging of all religions and the rose cross connection to the merging of all religions. The Rosicrucians apparently, symbolically, really want to merge a lot of religions. And they all do it with the symbology of the rose and the cross. It's very telling to me. It gives more links here. It says, check that link and see for yourself how many of these New Agers, Gnostics, and Love the Inner Light people are connected to the rose cross. Rudolf Steiner as well. And look at him and you'll see that the same modus operandi, a school network, and being mildly opposed by the system. The letter is the old, come on, we give them a bit of credibility, and oppose them trick. The same thing, different names and the characters for different audiences. Same agenda, though. Ever heard of the word controlled opposition? It somehow comes to mind, of course, that the Rose Cross is a good organization, somehow outside the Brotherhood Network. Sorry to say, but no, and I will make this very clear. A little foretaste. Perhaps the best explanation is that proposed by Colin Wilson in his preface on the book on Rosicrucians by Christopher McIntosh. This human desire to turn inward to a world of truth that he feels resides in his own depth, I believe, explains why Rosicrucianism has continued to exert its grip on the Western mind. It is not because we are hopelessly gullible or because we would like to believe in absurd fantasies. In the legend that the Christian Rosenkreuz, he's the founder guy I was talking about, we seem to catch a glimpse of what we ought to be and what we could be. His conclusion, the Scottish Rite, by offering the Rose Cross degree to its members, is only opening the door. Not everybody will profit from the opportunity to go through it and delve into its field of study. What matters is that the opportunity exists. This, after all, is the Masonic method and philosophy of our Ordin. In all its structures, we put the tools in the hands of the brother and let him labor according to his capacity and development, without compulsion, without prize, except for the process to a further degree, which will present new challenges. So just to recap what that's saying there is that the Rosicrucians are in no way separate from the Scottish Rite or Freemasonry. I mean, it's a degree offered to Scottish Rite Freemasons, a degree that they can choose to go to if they want to, you know? I mean, so you already have to be a part of the Scottish Rite, apparently. I don't know. I could be wrong about that, but it's definitely not separate. It says, anyway, let's look into the Sufi order a bit, another network, and I really encourage you to look into what possible difference there could be in the Sufi and the rest of it. And it says, count the stripes, talking about the symbols of these things. Count the stripes, yeah, 13. I know how obsessed these bastards are. It says, way to the heart, spiritual masters, blah, 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 same old talk. I can't really hear it anymore. Not from all this massive organizations who are part of the Brotherhood people have to look behind for this rhetoric. The devil is the master of words. Let's have a look as if the, quote, devil is master of words. Let's have a look at their symbol again. And again, we have another symbol check here. Oh, wait, I think we've seen that one before. And he shows the connection to the Rose Cross. And he says, read through this site. Also, note the similar symbol. I encourage you to do that. These are all about Rosicrucians, for Rosicrucians and all that. You can really, if you really want to know, do they believe something that we should be concerned about? Is Tessarian, does he seem like he's a part of what these Rosicrucians are saying that their order is all about? Or is he exactly like that? And it says, that's Tessarian's banner, by the way. And it's got the Rose Cross and everything else. Over and over again. It says the famous symbol affiliated with the Rose Cross, and it's a very detailed symbol. Give some more links here. It says also after asked if he was a member, he didn't answer, but said that it was a private thingy. Yeah, or he can't tell you straight away because of his oath, possible, and he wouldn't be that he would just say, nah, I was affiliated with him, but I left, or something like that. Anyway, you'll find the symbol on his banner, also used in the Order of the Golden Dawn in OTO. Why is that? The Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn gives a Rose Cross? Couldn't be, could it? Well, skeptics have a look here. They don't even hide it. Also, note the icons. Gives another link. The Rose Cross and the red and blue triangles. Now to the OTO. Read a bit through it. They also think Gnostics rock. Hey, nice fellas, gives this link. Gives another link. From that site, the OTO was not founded by Aleister Crowley, as many would believe, but an Austrian paper chemist, Karl Kellner. Well, Kellner was at least close to the Rosicrucians, gives another link saying that. And like the Rose Cross, they're into Gnostics, art, etc., etc. Check out some OTO artwork here. Note the painting. See the snake around the egg. Well, here we go again. And goes to a Terrascope site, which is Michael Tessarian's site. Doesn't he quote from Crowley's book on the law on his blog, OTO and Gnostics again? Quoting more sites. By the way, just found this one. Another artist who likes blue and red triangles. Okay, he goes on and he says, here's some wine, a typical bloodline thingy, but also really cultivated in Gnostics like Rosicrucians. Okay, I'm being a bit sarcastic now. I don't want to bash Gnostics, how could I, since there's a lot of truth to find in it, but it comes from the Brotherhood, and they are all too happy to teach us about it. I ask, why? The name the cross, just to scroll up in case you can't remember, is pretty obvious in my opinion, that shall show you guys that these people are the leading artists, scholars, and New Age gurus, or in my opinion, handlers of them, Gnostic teachers, druids, tarot, etc., etc. These people are elite too, and they do work for the agenda, which you can see in their zero opposition that these people face. Let's have a check unto, just have a check unto Ike Debunk sites if you want some proportions. I gotta say this is true. I mean, I cannot believe how little there is of people against Tessarian. I think that's why, you know, the people in his, you know, on his board and stuff, we're also thankful there was so much outpouring of thanks that somebody had finally said this stuff, and everybody was giving me their things that they had found wrong with them, and he says this wrong and translates this wrong, and you know, everybody was so glad to have an outlet to talk about this. It was amazing, and they weren't all, you know, just like people that were you know, like me or anything. He goes on, he says, read this about the Rosicrucian order Okay, it says, the Rosicrucian Order, A-M-O-R-C, is the internationally known as the Ancient Mystical Order Rosicrucius. We are a non-sectarian body of men and women devoted to the investigation, study, and practical application of natural and spiritual laws. Our purpose is to further the evolution of humanity through the development of the full potential of each individual. Our goal is to enable everyone to live in harmony with creative cosmic forces for the attainment of health, happiness, and peace. To assist in this attainment, the Rosicrucian Order offers the world's foremost system of instruction and guidance for exploring the inner self and discovering the universal laws that govern all human endeavor. It is based on the collective ancient wisdom and current knowledge of many of the world's most respected philosophers, artists, and scientists. Our teaching includes specific knowledge of metaphysics, mysticism, psychology, parapsychology, and science, not taught by conventional educational systems or traditional religions. This profound wisdom, carefully preserved by the mystery schools for centuries, is transmitted today through the Rosicrucian Order to every sincere person with an open mind and a positive motive. We do not propose a belief system nor a dogmatic decree, but a personal, practical approach to living that each student must learn and master through their own experiences. Our teachings do not attempt to dictate what you should think. We want to think for yourself. What we provide are simply the tools to enable you to accomplish this. The Rosicrucian Order consists of thousands of men and women in over 100 countries throughout the world. To teach a diverse membership, AMORC is divided by language into jurisdictions called Grand Lodges. Wow, how fancy is that? Vibe points 9 out of 10. Let's all join the Rose Cross. Viva la Reformation. I'll agree too. There, I mean, that description right there just sounds like it's the best thing in the world. Let's all just jump in. Talking about Reformation, I noticed that this anti-NWO logo that is a reverse pyramid with a man standing on top of it, right? I can't find it now, but I'm sure I'll find it sooner or later. But some people use it as an avatar. Does this look remarkably like this one? And he shows this ancient symbol and shows, and where do you find this? The Rennes-le-Château. Wait, the Château, not connected with the Knights Templar, but specifically with priory design. Yep, that's right. Wait for this one. The Order of the Cross is nothing less than the priory design, the Scion. And who brought us the Renaissance? Who are the leading free thinkers, artists, scholars of the old days? Nostradamus, Newton, Da Vinci, Van Gogh, all these connected to the Priory and various other orders. Same old game, just different names. Check this one. And it shows the Grand Master of the Priory and what you would see on this site, the same cross used by the Rosicrucians. Another clue is the word Ormus. The Priory Notre Dame to Sion, or Priory Zion, is said to be the cabal behind many of the events occurred at the Rennes-le-Château. According to the Priory's own documents, its history is long and convoluted. Its earlier roots are in some of the Hermetic or Gnostic society led by a man named Ormus. This individual is said to have reconciled paganism and Christianity. The story of Zion only comes in focus in the Middle Ages. This is an important point when you look through the links and stuff to really get a handle on this, that is a big part of the mystery schools and the secret societies, and that's a big part of what I'm trying to say and that Bill Cooper was trying to say, that these people didn't even really claim that it's true. They people like Plutarch and stuff, and this whole reconciling of the mystery schools to Christianity is a Masonic practice. You know, this whole idea of the shifting of what the Catholic Church is and making it be all these pagan things that have to do with other religions, and then is something that they were doing. You know, Christianity itself doesn't, but the crazy stuff that the Catholic Church does, you know, I mean, you can point to all the stuff that they do all day long and say, look, it's just like other religions. Like, yeah, what the Catholic Church did to Christianity is, but again, it's not Christianity. But it's really interesting to know that that's what they're doing. That's what Zeitgeist and the rest of it are doing. And the few short list of people that are bold enough to make the claims that they do without any evidence. And I just, again, can't implore you guys enough to check that for yourself. You can go to my site, offer a lot of stuff about that. How their story fits into everything would take too long to tell at this point. And that time period when the Knights of Templars took off on their own, the Order de Zion became the Priory of de Zion, and we also use the names Ormus and Rose Cross. The Priory de Zion is intimately connected to the creation and guidance of the Rosicrucian Order and Freemasons. In the Be Wise as Serpents book, in chapter 12, it talks about how Priory de Zion set up the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. And gets another link. You'll find the membership list, but don't believe for a second it's complete till you get the drift, which is bloodliners and people who have shaped the world. By the way, John D., Rose Cross, read the link. Probably best of them all. Some gems from the link. It says, It generally is associated with the symbol of the Rose Cross, which is found in certain rituals beyond craft or Blue Lodge Freemasonry. It also says the Rosicrucian Order is viewed among earlier and more modern Rosicrucianists as an inner world's order, compromised of agent adepts. When compared to human beings, the consciousness of these adepts is like of demigods. Made a human, anyone? Master soul? Ascended master? Damn, fellas, the clues are all over the place. Anyway, it goes on. According to a lesser-known legend found in Masonic literature, the Rosicrucian Order was created in year 46 when Alexandrian Gnostic sage named Ormus and his six followers were converted by one of Jesus' disciples, Mark. From this conversion, Rosicrucianism was born by fusing early Christianity with Egyptian mysteries. By this account, rather than being its founder, Rosencruz would have been initiated into and become the Grand Master of an already existing order. No, I don't believe Jesus has something to do with it, but I still believe that, to be more accurate than the Rosencruz story, or fairy tale, however you want to call it, their doctrine had its source in the study of ancient Greek philosophers, i.e. Plutarch, but it came more pronounced in the Neo-Pythagorean direction. They adopted Pythagorean traditions and envisioned objects and ideas in the terms of the numeric concepts, the thenergy taught by the divine and angelic names, conjurations, the Kabbalah, exorcisms, and related subjects. The Brethren of Purity and the Sufis were united in many points of doctrine. They both were mystical orders derived from Quranic theology, where dogma is supplanted by faith in the divine reality. Many similarities with Rosicrucian way were expressed in the manifestos of the Brethren of Purity, ways of life as well. Sufi connection again, but more interestingly, the Kabbalah. Priory were known for teaching, but specifically using the Kabbalah. Also a very good link. And it says, have a look at the Rose Museum in California. Another link. Egypt connection is quite obvious. Here is more. Quote, another example was just popped up and makes the Gnostic Rose Cross connection. It's really everywhere. White Rose under the code for a Rose Cross. So some more symbols. White Rose University, blah, blah, blah. Nordicon, lots of stuff. Also, Manly P. Hall, the 33rd degree Mason and other shooting star of lately, recommended by Tessarian and the AMORC. In nice company, by the way. Manly P. Hall, The Secret Teachings of All Ages. Max Heindel, wrote The Secret Teachings of All Ages. These are books, I guess, Tessarian recommends. Max Heindel, The Rosicrucian Cosmos Conception. Aldous Huxley, The Penennial Philosophy. Eliphas Levi, The History of Magic. Blavatsky's Secret Doctrine, The Egyptian Book of the Dead. Kabbalah stuff. Again, this isn't, I mean, just recommending books isn't bad, but okay, it says Rudolf Steiner, Christianity as a mythical fact and occult mysteries of antiquity, which describes the true esoteric Christianity kept alive in heretical groups like the Bogom Mills and the Aboriginals. Truth brought to you by Brotherhood Peoples. Tessarian's own words. Quote, my first major discoveries in the tarot were made in the mid-90s in California after years of intense study of philosophy, occultism, mythology, ancient religions, sacred geometry, Pythagorean mathematics, cosmology, alchemy, etymology, and finally astrotheology. I became aware that the divination arts were all intimately connected and were taught as one subject in the days of old, not in the fragmented manner of today. In the late 90s, I began giving classes in the divination arts with the emphasis on tarot. My classes were first held in Los Angeles and then later in the San Francisco Bay Area. My mission is to bring these empowering arts into as many lives as possible on a grassroots level. He says, I come directly from the philosophical, metaphysical traditions. It is my bloodline. It is, quote, my bloodline from my generations past. We would do well, therefore, to remember that though many can teach ancient subjects, few can teach them in the ancient way, and there is a difference. So he's talking about his bloodline here. Okay, and he goes on to talk about how in his blog he talks about, that he was affiliated and learned and studied with all these different groups, including the Sufis and all these religious groups, and he says he learned everything from them, but he never was a member of any of them, which is interesting that he doesn't mention Rosicrucians, because he mentions the Sufis, which is basically the Islamic Rosicrucians, it appears. You can do the research there. And then and he mentions all these other religions, but he omits Rosicrucians from that big long list when he says, I wasn't a member of any of these, but I learned too much from them, or something, you know, to that effect. And then, you know, I think, again, this isn't about, oh, he's a Rosicrucian, that's it, that proves something. Well, not really, until you can study about the Rosicrucians. Do they, I mean, are they the same group, or are they not affiliated with, or what's the connection between the Rosicrucians as the oaths they take and the things that they believe? How does that jive with, let's say, the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry? And is the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry and the rest of that and the rest of the secret societies, are they a part of the NWO, or are they exactly the NWO? Or are they, you know, I mean, what's the connection there? I mean, should we be concerned about that? And let's just go back from that for a second. Let's just say that it's okay, you know, and it's not really that big a deal. But we have to at least agree that it does appear that they, that the Rosicrucians as an organization, whether they are, you know, the white magicians or something, some kind of separate from the black magicians, doublespeak kind of situation like that, then, you know, they definitely want to unite all the world's religions. And I would suggest to you that the one world government needs a one world religion, and that is a big part of this. That the whole truth movement seems to just be missing, that there could be any dogmatic agenda, because they've been told by these same people, the same people putting forth a dogmatic propaganda, that they're pulling the wool over your eyes by saying that there is a dogmatic propaganda, but it's the Christians, they're trying to control your minds with the Bible, which they never you know, it was illegal to read the Bible, you know, the Catholic Church, so some control mechanism that they thought that was. But you see what I'm saying? The Rosicrucians want a one world religion real badly. I mean, it seems like almost agenda number one. And here, Tessarian, who by all accounts is affiliated very deeply with the Rosicrucians, at his basic premise is saying, I mean, if you take all the specifics out and just look at his work as a whole, all you can come out with is, you know, we really should all unite religiously. I mean, this is all about, this is a, you know, this is certainly not about Christianity, but it's about, you know, I mean, you know, we were genetically seeded by aliens, and, you know, that's the whole Ronald Reagan thing. I mean, in order to really unite the world, we need to do that with, you know, with an alien threat. And that's what my show's been about since the beginning, is the fact that they are pushing this dogma, getting ready to introduce some kind of cosmic situation, whether real or promulgated, as Henry Kissinger says, and unite us in that way. And then we'll just follow right into the one world government, but it'll be utopia, because it'll be led by the aliens or somebody that is in contact with the aliens. But see, the thing is, that's what the Bible said 2,000 years ago. It laid out their plan, and that's why they have to continually discredit it. Just think about that logically with me. If these people have an agenda to create a one world government and a one world religion, and the Bible went and told on them 2,000 years ago, which validates the rest of it, of course they're going to have a massive campaign to discredit that. Oh, don't look at that. That's just crazy. You wouldn't want anything to do with that. Don't look at that. It's not for you. That's stupid. That's propaganda. For there to control your mind. Don't you know? Anyway, just think of that. I mean, it's a simple concept. But anyway, what I want to do now is I want to play a clip from Bill Cooper, and this is way, way interesting. This is from his series, Mystery Babylon, that he did in the Hour of the Time. He's now passed away, but anyway, this is a really interesting thing. I agree with Bill Cooper on almost everything. I mean, this is back in like 93, and I know there's a lot of things I don't think he really pieced together, but he certainly had a lot of it pieced together. But this is really interesting, because he's describing here, you'll hear what he's laying out. But I want you to notice that the person that he's describing and the dogma that they have, if you are a Tessarian person, let you know his work pretty well, see if you can see any similarities in the person that he's describing. See if there are, if it is exactly like Tessarian or not. And when did this guy write this? You know, is that, does this suggest that Tessarian is just singing the party line? Singing the party song? I mean, really, what does this suggest if this guy is saying this? And this is back in 93 or whatever. Okay, so I'm going to leave you with that. I wanted to do a few other things, but I really just want to get this show out. Again, you can email me at chris@conspiracyclose.com. That's chris@conspiracyclose.com. I know I get stuff up wrong all the time, and I know this guy who wrote this thing might have got a lot of stuff wrong, so I'm willing to correct it. I make mistakes all the time. This isn't about mistakes. You know, it's about an agenda. And so we need to look at that. I'm going to play this clip. Thanks for everybody. You can go to the website, which is conspiracyclose.com/nowheretorun.
You're listening to the Hour of the Times. I'm William Cooper.
Good evening, folks. Tonight's episode is a rerun due to the great mass of bullshit poured out on Radio Freemasonry just prior to this program. We will expose this wolf in sheep's clothing in his own words.
Tonight we're going to play a portion of a program that originally aired on June the 23rd, 1993. If after hearing tonight's program you wish to order that original broadcast, it is tape number 123 in our catalog. That's tape number 123 in our catalog. We discussed this rerun a little bit last night, so you all know the subject. But you all need to hear it again, even those of you who heard it the first time that it was broadcast, and those of you, of course, who have never heard it and are struggling, attempting to understand the purpose of the Hour of the Time. We hope that this rebroadcast will bring some things into the forefront that have been lurking into the shadows and will make some of the conversation that you've heard on the Hour of the Time much clearer. We encourage you to order the original tape from the original broadcast on June 23rd, 1993, so that you may study its content in your home. Now, without further ado, we go in to the rebroadcast of the mystery exposé. At the end of this rerun, ladies and gentlemen, we will open the phones for your comments and questions.
Now, folks, I'm going to take you into the mind of someone who has been an initiate, an adept, a priest of the mystery school for many, many years. I'm not going to identify this person until the end of the program. I want you to see if you can guess who this person is and what this is all about. If you can, then you'll know instantly what this program is for, the reason behind it, and you'll be able to understand a little bit better how you've been manipulated for many, many years by the priest of the hidden religion called Mystery Babylon. And if you can't guess, then at the end of the show, you're going to be told, and you better be holding onto your chair because it just might knock you right out. Just might knock you right out. I'm going to quote from a book that this person wrote. This person verified something that I wrote in my book, Behold a Pale Horse, and that is the calendar of the hidden religion of Mystery Babylon. It's 6,000 years, and it started in 4,000 B.C. and ends in the year 2000. Quote, "The Great Pyramid system of passages and chambers is a chronological graph that begins in 4,000 B.C. and continues for 6,000 years," unquote. Now, let's go to an interview that was conducted with this person by someone else, not by me. But I'm going to be reading to you word for word this entire interview, and this is going to take up most of the program, but this is going to give you a glimpse into the personality, the religious beliefs of the priests of the mystery religion, and you'll see sort of how they try to disguise what they really believe. behind this aura of wanting to further the evolution of mankind and create some kind of a world utopia, which they know in their heart is a lie to begin with. So, I'm going to call these number one and number two. Number one is the interviewer. Number two is the interviewee. Number one, how did you become interested in the Great Pyramid? Number two, well, like everyone else, for most of my life, I accepted the idea that the Great Pyramid was just a great big pile of stone made by thousands and thousands of slaves. But I read a book in 1967 called The Ultimate Frontier. That book profoundly affected my life. In it, they made statements about the Great Pyramid being much more than a tomb. Point in fact, it never was a tomb for a pharaoh. It is a monument to mankind and human perfection. It is the oldest artifact of an ancient system of religious belief. Then I thought, that's something I can check out. I can see if the information in The Ultimate Frontier is true or not. I started investigating. I then learned a great number of things about the Great Pyramid. First of all, the ancient Greeks were quite right in calling it the first wonder of the world. When one considers the thought, preparation, and choice of site, one will see that the solid bedrock of the Giza Plateau, the only tableland within miles capable of supporting the weight of the structure, was the most intelligent choice. There is a fantastic amount of literature about the Great Pyramid. Therefore, it is not unusual that we also find a great deal of controversy surrounding it. The British in the 1860s were the first to study the ancient building in a serious manner by re-examining the theories of the British, which were discarded by the experts of that time. The crux of my book began to take shape. Number one, does the crux of your book include the fact that the Great Pyramid may not have been built by the ancient Egyptians? Number two, yes. The British did not discuss that possibility. That possibility is my own bit of research. However, most people who study the Great Pyramid realize that the civilization we know as ancient Egyptian could not have built the Great Pyramid the way we know today. It would have had to have been built. You see, the building is built geometrically perfect, and according to our present conception of ancient history, the Egyptians didn't understand highly theoretical mathematics, obviously, from the way the other 89 major pyramids in Egypt were constructed. The manner in which the other pyramids were constructed was a very haphazard way of building. They are copies of the Great Pyramid. The Great Pyramid itself is, however, absolute perfection in stone, both to the pi relationship, the relationship of a diameter to the circumference of a circle, and the golden mean are phi relationships, with which we can divide a straight line so that a squared plus b squared equals c squared. The reason why it was structured is embodied in the word itself, pyramid, which means lights and measures, that there are revelation types of lights. The word for pyramid used by the ancient Egyptians was glorious light, and the word has meaning that there are revelations in the measurement. If you pursue this hint, so to speak, you find out that the builders of the Great Pyramid are the same people that wrote the original text of the Old Testament, and they laid out their plan in the Great Pyramid as well as in the Scriptures. I hope, folks, you understand the significance of that one statement, and there's much, much more to come. Number one, who are these people? Number two, my opinion is they were what we call Hyksos, or Hyksos, and we find traces of them throughout Mesoamerica, India, and the Middle East in the earliest of times. The Egyptians had two or three different waves of Hyksos rulers come in. The word Hyksos, for many years, was translated shepherd king, which is a paradox. You see, looking at life the way we look at it today, how could a group who were non-warlike come into a land and take over and run things without any fighting? Yet they obviously did, and these ancient builders had a profound influence wherever they went. The years of research I've done tell me that the Hyksos were a group of people who had in their culture information stemming from a previous civilization. I think that our view of history, saying that it started in the cradle of civilization in Egypt and Mesopotamia, is wrong. The surviving evidence indicates both Egypt and Mesopotamia are actually later civilizations, remnants of a far, far greater early empire. And here, folks, we see in this person's philosophy the same philosophy that Hitler pursued, the myth of ancient Atlantis, or Mu, if you will, an ancient civilization, which, when it was destroyed, left behind a remnant, a surviving element of that race, which is a super race, more intelligent, smarter, more worthy than any other race on this earth, if you will, the master race. And if you understand the esoteric meaning of what you're hearing, you are hearing Nazi philosophy, National Socialism, Hitler's vision of world history. And when you find out who this person is and what he's doing now, we'll all come together. We continue. Number one, do you think the Hyksos race was a race chosen by some greater intelligence to impart a superior ideology to the rest of the human race? Number two, not so much chose, but actually chose themselves. All genius is self-appointed. I would say these people were a remnant from a previous culture, and they had something they wanted to do, and they embodied their thinking in their work, and they influenced people by their works. Folks, that's the Luciferian philosophy. Continuing. They came into the land, and there were already humans in the Nile Valley. But they came into the land in an unobtrusive and dexterous maneuver so as not to alarm the existing culture. They came in without fighting. They took the worst land. They didn't try to impress their knowledge on the others. They just did things in a better way. Soon the people in that area were paying attention to them. Once they gained the attention of the people, it didn't take very long before they were running everything, because they did everything with better methodology, which is the way life ought to be. You ought to show by example. Number one, what happened then? Number two, fairly soon after arriving, they suggested to the people that as life was now so peaceful and harmonious, it would be a happy challenge to build a monument to the future of mankind. In my opinion, the Hyksos philosophy and the philosophy of many modern people is identical in that human beings can be perfect if they work toward that end, and that is the heart and soul philosophy of Mystery Babylon, the mystery school, that man himself will become God. Wait until you find out who this is. Number one, what happened to the ancient tribe, the Hyksos? Number two, I think they are still in existence today and have not died out, but have gone underground many thousands of years ago. What we call Masonry, Freemasonry, is an offshoot of the group that started out. The Hyksos group became what the Ultimate Frontier calls the Brotherhoods. These are a group of people who have knowledge about what it really means to be human. And folks, that implies that the rest of us are not, and that also is in direct line and in direct concert with the philosophy of the mystery religion of Babylon. You see, to them, we are all cattle, animals who have no intelligence. Continuing, these are a group of people who have knowledge about what it really means to be human, to be a human becoming, to grow toward human perfection. It's a philosophical thing. These people still exist. They still band together in groups here and there, and they show by doing. Again, their lifestyle shows that they really have a handle on what life is all about. They don't try to impress others with numbers or with what they know. They just live doing something they want to accomplish while they are here. We know in Egypt these people formed secret societies, and that Pharaoh Akhenaten came up, quote, under the rose, unquote, out of one of these secret societies and took over the land of Egypt in a manner that forbids disclosure at a time in which the superficial popular theology left a want unsatisfied, which religion in a wider sense alone could supply. And there he has admitted that he knows the esoteric teachings of the mystery schools, their origin and their purpose. And if you've been listening from the beginning, now you know that this person is a priest of the mystery religion himself. Continuing, we know Alexander the Great wanted to get the knowledge of one of these ancient secret societies because he writes about it a great deal. Pythagoras consented to be circumcised in order to become one of the initiates of these secret societies, which are the Hyksos population carrying their knowledge of science and the universe and cosmology with them and keeping the truth secret so they wouldn't be persecuted and wiped out. You can imagine what society today would do to a group of people like this, were they to perform certain ancient rituals in public. Look what they did to Akhenaten as soon as he was dead. They destroyed the city he built. Number one. That's right, they tried to. Number two, wipe out his name. Number one, yes, because he taught there was only one God. Number two, the human tendency in the mass populace. Number one, when you use the term mass populace, are you referring to a group of people who have become undeveloped on account of a too pleasant or a too severe climate, or even from physiological or psychological causes? Number two, the phrase mass populace was a term used by the ancient ones, which usually refers to those in a populace, in any country, who sit back waiting for some savior to raise them up out of their misery. Recognize the venom directed at Christianity, folks? Number one, then you are referring to people who are merely living a conditioned response to their environment. Number two, yes, the human tendency in the mass populace is to tear things down rather than to reach up to the excellent, which brings everything down to mediocrity. We're doing that in this country today with our so-called standards from the federal government. Everything's got to be brought down. This is just another social indication of this tendency in human beings to bring things down to a lower level so it's easier instead of striving for excellence. The Hyksos people went after pleasing results and worked hard in this manner. They strove for excellence, and therefore they had to go underground to keep from being persecuted. In almost every case that we can trace, anyone that tried to bring the truth to man has been crucified or killed in some cruel or barbarous human ritual. And folks, for many years, that was exactly true. But this is not the true intent of these people, for if you also go back through history, you'll find that these are the people who have been behind every religious war, have been behind every revolution, have been behind and literally are the heart and soul of socialism and communism. And everywhere they go, death follows, and a stench. Number one, do you know how the Great Pyramid was constructed? Number two, I leave that puzzle to the engineers, architects, and professors of physics who have researched and studied the building. No one at the present really knows. There are several suppositions, but since no one really knows, that mystery remains to be answered in the next 24 years. And since no one really knows, in my opinion, there's no such thing as an expert. Number one, in that case, how do you believe the Great Pyramid may have been constructed? Number two, my information from people who seem very knowledgeable says that they built in with water locks and floated the blocks into place. That's pretty hard to conceive of because they would have had to have been tremendous luck because the Great Pyramid is up on a plateau at least 6 miles from the banks of the Nile River. Water with a series of basins and pipes that match the corridor and the chamber system of the Great Pyramid's interior system embodies all the laws of hydraulic engineering. For example, the Great Pyramid's Grand Gallery is a perfect vacuum bottle. And this pumping system, which I explain in my book as I explore the research work of Edward J. Kunkel, author of the book Pharaoh's Pump. Well, folks, it's time to take our break. Don't go away. We'll be right back and continue with this revelation after this very short pause. And we continue, folks. Number one, if this tribe of people, the Hyksos, caused the Great Pyramid to be constructed, did they know their message wouldn't be understood for thousands of years, or did they think that humans would grasp its meaning a little bit before that? Number two, I think it's quite apparent that they knew it would be grasped in the 20th century. I think that they laid it out, the core of their meaning would be picked up by those who really had the mathematical know-how. It wasn't until 1905 that we had the real understanding of gravitational astronomy. The astronomy involving the solar system and the movement of the Earth around the sun, down so fast that we had all the answers the builders of the Great Pyramid had. They knew as much or more about today's system of gravitational astronomy as we know. Number one, do you think this falls in line with a number of other theories that humans were at one time visited by supremely intelligent beings from other worlds? Number two, I don't accept that thesis. However, I believe that there is life probably on every little planetoid in the entire universe. life that is similar to ours, having a spiritual nature but somewhat different in physical nature. No other beings from outer space ever came down here and cohabited with the apes, as Mr. von Daniken would say. I would reject that thesis, but on the other hand, I would say we are indeed created by another intelligence far greater than this planet or even this solar system. You know, it's a funny thing. I was once an atheist. I went through most of my college days as an atheist. I went through most of my college days as an anthropologist and didn't believe in a creative theory at all. But after studying for many years, I was forced to accept the fact that I obviously had been created because it just didn't happen by chance. There's no way, I would say, that this theory that something in outer space came down and interfered is quite accurate in that respect. We are in the image of a creator of some kind that we can't even conceive. Therefore, we have the ability to do all kinds of fantastic things. I think there was a civilization 50,000 years ago in the Pacific, now underwater, that had in it achievements that we only think of today. Number one. Okay, just a minute. Let me backtrack here. At the beginning of the interview, you mentioned that you began your investigation of the Great Pyramid after you read The Ultimate Frontier. What's it all about? Number two. Oh, that's a big topic. The Ultimate Frontier ties together a history of this planet, the idea and purpose for mankind being a part of it, and a philosophy of growth towards human perfection, and how this philosophy is what life is really all about. The truth of this was lost when the great civilization on the Pacific continent of Mu was destroyed by a sudden cataclysmic change on the crust of the earth 50,000 years ago. There are a group of individuals who call themselves the Brotherhoods, unobtrusively working to uplift mankind back to this ancient wisdom belief, and the Great Pyramid is indeed a monument to this particular brotherhood. Number one. Perhaps the truth is never lost. Perhaps as we evolve towards a true understanding of essentials, we suddenly find ourselves faced with a question where we discover that we have really understood nothing at all, and consequently have to begin learning all over again on a new and higher level. Perhaps the memory of the destruction of Mu and other catastrophic events is contained in the collective unconsciousness of man. Perhaps some humans, direct genetic descendants of the survivors of these cataclysmic events, carry in their bloodline a genetic mutation. Let me read that portion again, folks. Perhaps some humans, direct genetic descendants of the survivors of these cataclysmic events, carry in their bloodline a genetic mutation. Perhaps this genetic mutation was deeply imprinted into the central nervous system of some of our forebears who actually experienced and survived a sudden slippage in the Earth's tectonic plates or a supernova explosion. Such a genetic mutation passed in genetic structures or DNA from generation to generation may explain why some of us today are more acutely sensitive to subtle Earth tremors than our neighbors. In any case, this book, The Ultimate Frontier, started your mental processes working along these lines. Number two. Ah, they were already working along this line, just like many peoples are without knowing about it. I had started into investigation of phenomena and mysticism on my own because my religious convictions couldn't answer my questions. Going to different churches and checking them out, I found, didn't answer my questions as to why I am. I've always wanted to know why. The human physiology is a remarkable thing. Why should it be? Why should we be different than the animals? Why should we have these philosophies when no other animal has philosophy? I studied many of the standard religions, but they couldn't answer my question to my satisfaction. I didn't like the idea of blind faith. To me, blind faith is irresponsible and unreasonable. Then I got into science and became an atheist. I was working on a master's degree in anthropology and found that, just like the churches, the information from the scientific side fell short. They can't answer all the questions. In fact, the more we learn, the more anomalies we have, and we realize how little we know. Then my son, who at the time was 4.5 years old, nearly drowned. In fact, he did drown. He was full of salt water and unconscious for 45 minutes. He should, by all rights, have died. The year was 1960. I was eating at a restaurant on the beach when I saw him floating face down in the water. I ran across the beach, jumped into the water, handed him to my brother, who handed him to a strange old man who appeared to be a derelict. When this old man pumped out the water, I was in shock. One of my son for the next 45 minutes.
He refused to give my son to the ambulance crew and the doctor who arrived and pronounced him dead. The old man looked into my eyes and said, "This boy isn't dead. I'm going to bring him back." I told the doctor, "Let him keep trying," and the old man kept working. 45 minutes is a long period of time to remain unconscious without breathing. However, my son not only recovered without brain damage from that episode, but he told us in the hospital exactly all of the events that took place. From me running out of that restaurant, jumping across the breakwater, diving into the water, and getting him, handing him up to my brother, he recalled all of this as if he had been watching it as a spectator, and yet he was unconscious. I mean, he wasn't Gene Dixon or anything. That personal experience was positive proof in my mind that the human mind is a lot greater than that body. Number one, did it reinforce a previous belief, or did it really serve to allow you to see for the first time that there are other realities? Number two, it made me relook at some of my own experiences. It made me stop and think about a lot of things. For instance, the first thing it made me think of is when I was studying anthropology. I was studying the theory of evolution, chance evolution, chemistry, just providing a scenario for itself to keep procreating and surviving and improving and so on. If we accept evolution as the ultimate answer, we have to accept a ludicrous notion that atoms, all matter, is made up of the atomic elements, can so arrange themselves as to be able to give themselves abstract qualities such as memory, desire, will, curiosity, consciousness, conscience, creativity, intuition, emotion, and reason. How can you get that chemically? You can't. It has to be something else that is endowed, and man is the only one that has it. A goat doesn't see the stars or know what's over the mountain or know anything about life and death. You see, but we do. These ideas were in my head, and intuitively I knew there was much more. But when that happened to my son, I realized that I, too, am a discrete bundle of mental energy. Only I didn't have that phraseology for it. I didn't know about what life was all about as I feel I do now. Number one. Were you able to determine the capability of the human being to deal with all these diverse areas of knowledge? Number two, certainly I'm doing it and I'm nothing extraordinary. I am dealing with all of these areas of knowledge in a relaxed and causal and fun way. And I feel that I am growing. I am not impatient about my growth because I know that someday, if I continue to try to improve myself, if I continue to use those qualities of mind that I have, then I will become as perfect as humanly possible. Now, according to our basic beliefs in this country, human beings are created in the image of their creator. To me, that means we have the same qualities of mind. We're certainly not the physical image, but the mental image. We have will, memory, desire, curiosity, consciousness, creativity, conscience. I've gone through those before. Intuition, emotion, reason. Those 10 qualities of mind are the same qualities as the Creator has. Perhaps we can never become absolute perfection as the Creator. Whatever it is must have been. I cannot conceive of the creative force, not enough to verbalize it and make sense to everyone, but I think we can obtain relative perfection and become one with the Creator by improving ourselves based upon what we have to work with. There's no limit to human abilities, to what humans can do. We limit ourselves by our own conditioning. Number one, do you think that most people are really trying to find out about all these things? Number two, many humans are. I would say there are millions of people who have an inner urging towards something better, especially in this day and age, because now there are more of them here. Out of the great majority, roughly 220 million people today in the United States, only about 2 or 3 million are really interested in what makes them tick. What is involved in life, the purpose of it all, and in really growing and building on their character. The other 200 and something million are merely living a conditioned response from their environment, and they don't think about it at all. Look, here we are in the city of Atlanta, a huge city. Look at the people walking back and forth. They're positive in many ways, and yet they never really give it a thought as to why they are, why they're capable of building these tremendous buildings and driving those tremendous vehicles they drive. Catholicism has been losing quite a few members because those members say that their religion is not in tune with the time, and this is the case in many other religious bodies. Do you believe that formal religion is just not keeping in tune with the times, or has it ever been in tune with them? Number two. Oh, considerably in tune. Essentially, it's this. The church for the last 2,000 years has done a remarkable job with what it's had to work with. Remember, they're dealing with part of the truth. Part of the truth. I've just finished this week a new book called The Life and Death of Planet Earth. Now, what it points out is that the absolute truth is what we're all trying to find out, and we prove this subjectively. We know it, and nobody can change our minds. Because we know it, just like I know that fire burns my fingers because I've stuck them in there. You can tell me all you want, but I won't believe it until I do it. Knowledge is what we're seeking. The church has started off with a paradigm, a framework of understanding, and they had to work within that framework, and their framework was quite narrow. Then Jesus came along and broadened it tremendously. He resurrected the ideas of love and brotherhood and working, you too can do as I do. He was showing by his lifestyle that you can be perfect. You can know yourself. You can know your Creator. You can know what it's all about. All you have to do is get off the dime and stop being so lazy and pay attention. That's what he was saying. Human beings have a tendency to want to put frameworks around things so they can be comfortable with them. So the early church put a framework around the truth. Theologians have translated and interpreted what has been said by all the great teachers until it's been quite distorted. However, even with all of the translations and misinterpretations of what was really said in the ancient times, they've done a remarkable job. They've done some bad things as well as good things in the eye of history. But the information is here. All you have to do is want it and dig for it. I found it. I found it for myself. There's more than one path. The reason I follow the path of the Great Pyramid is because I'm a doubter, a skeptic, and there's something made of stone, the world's largest stone structure. It can be checked and rechecked and measured and remeasured. It's been around for a very, very long time, and there's no doubt it's there. However, it's a metaphysical idea. Somebody going into a trance and some voice talking through him telling me he's Jesus, that doesn't prove anything to me. It could be, but I could never prove it. I can prove what the Great Pyramid does, and that turned me on. There are answers to everyone's questions. We each have progressed, you see. I accept we've lived many thousands of lifetimes. Let me repeat that. I accept we've lived many thousands of lifetimes. People say, oh, reincarnation, I can't believe that. Well, they probably didn't believe it in their last lifetime either. I probably didn't either. However, each time we live a life, we learn something more towards this perfection. This perfection. We're supposed to be growing until finally we reach a point where we choose our incarnation with such great care that we incarnate to two very sharp parents, at which point we grow with a tremendous rate of speed. That's the purpose of it all. Civilization's purpose is to provide the playground, the background, the environment that enhances soul growth, character growth, an environment which enhances the ability of humans to practice the virtues. By practicing these virtues, love, brotherhood, and working, you too can do as I do, which are part of universal law. What you put out comes back to you, karma. You set an example for others by practicing patience, tolerance, forbearance, kindness, and charity. In your everyday life, you grow. By your example, you set off a multitude of self-sustaining series of events, a chain reaction which strengthens the truth. I found this for myself. This is the message in all of the esoteric teachings in all seven of the great religions. I think the key thing that the present human civilization is missing, is that the idea has been lost, that we're all responsible. Individual responsibility has been lost. We want some wizard to come along and do it for us. We want the preacher on Sunday to save us from our sins. We want the man in the confessional booth to cleanse us. We don't want to do it for ourselves. Well, there are no wizards. Every single ego, every single created individual or discrete bundle of mental energy must do it for himself. This is part of the message of the Great Pyramid, and as soon as humans realize this and take responsibility for their actions, the problems of the planet Earth will be diminished a thousandfold. Number one, I found it most fascinating, the fact you mentioned a moment ago that the individual ego has a hand in the choice of his or her own incarnated person. Number two, this is esoteric information. I use the term esoteric information. Esoteric meaning inside. Inside information. And it's only information that has been given to me. I've not proven it yet. Even if I did prove it, it would still be only information to you. So the difference between information and knowledge is clear. We need to make that clear. Now, my information is that each of us chooses our parents and our station and our situation, even our race. Listen to this, folks. Listen to this.
crap. Beginning again. One of the individuals that I have been told about in this esoteric information was George Washington Carver, who deliberately incarnated into a race that was downtrodden to work on the idea of bringing them up. He was an ego of tremendous advancement, and when he did incarnate into that environment, which was a terrible environment, I understand he may have lost a few points because he became embittered near the end. Had he remained without bitterness, he would have gained. This is the story I have. We all take a chance incarnating into a civilization that can drag us down, because when you get inside of a physical body, you become subject to the nuisances of that animal body and the conditioning and the responses, and it's up to you, with those 10 qualities of mind, to overcome those. That's why being well-disciplined is vitally important, and permissiveness is not why. Well, folks, there's no way I'm going to be able to read to you all of this interview, because it's just too long, so I'm going to pick out some pertinent points. This is number 2 talking, and this is an excerpt from a paragraph. However, don't permit it. Don't say laziness is good for everybody, because you won't get uptight if you're lazy. We have so many errors on the idea of human potential and what to do with it. I believe in being well-disciplined, but not cruelly. I believe in responsibility in the organization I belong to. The Stell Group. The Stell Group. The group in which Lars Hansen was reared. Now I want to quote to you from a book called The New World Order by A. Ralph Epperson, which you can order from Publius Press in Tucson, Arizona. On page 67 in The New World Order, Mr. A. Ralph Epperson has a direct quote from Eklal Kushana. He was the leader of the Stell Group. Mr. Tex Mars also has the same quote in one or two of his books. But I'm taking this from The New World Order by A. Ralph Epperson. Quote, Lucifer is the head of a secret brotherhood of spirits. The brotherhood is named after Lucifer because the great angel Lucifer has been responsible for the abolishment of Eden in order that men could begin on the road to a spiritual advancement, unquote. That is the teachings of the leader of the Stell Group, the group that this man belongs to. So, folks, pay attention. This again is number 2 speaking. This is a part of the message, a band of men at the dawning of the age of Taurus, a more civilized age embodied in the Great Pyramid's mathematical code, to transmit to a generation of humans living in the age of Aquarius, something they felt was vitally important. The age of Aquarius began 23 August 1953, and this is a new age idea, the idea that we can perceive and try to improve. Of course, there's still a larger majority of humans, even in the age of Aquarius, that want to drag people down and lower the standards. However, every single ego, every single human, has the capabilities of bringing himself up to the equal of his creator. It's just a matter of effort and patience and practicing the virtues. Number 1. As Jesus stood between the two columns, Jachin and Boaz, in the outer porch of King Solomon's temple, John 10, verse 23, on 25th December, the celebration of the winter solstice, which is what that date is really for, a large majority of the people did not understand him when he said, "Ye are gods," John 10, verse 34. Some people in the crowd took up stones to kill him as a money changer in the temple cocked his head away from his table to see what some in the crowd were yelling about. He heard Jesus say, "Is it not written in your law, I said ye are gods," as he saw a lawgiver of the temple sit bolt upright to listen to this man speaking to the crowd. The money changer wondered why such an important lawgiver of the temple sat up to listen, as rigid as a rod of iron, remembering the law and his responsibility, as the lawgiver remembered Psalm 82, verse 6. He remembered a song of Asaph, in which God said, "Ye are gods." The man speaking to the crowd said, "The Father is in me, and I in him." And what he meant could not have been other than what he said. As the crowd screamed blasphemy and moved forward to kill Jesus, he simply disappeared. So when you say humans have the capability to bring themselves up to the equal of their Creator, it would seem to me that this New Age idea is in reality a very, very ancient idea. However, you did say that this was part of the message of the Great Pyramid. But what about these ancient brotherhoods, these people who are responsible for all this secret type of teaching, which seems to be such a mystical notion? Are they still around today? Number 2. I think so, very much. In fact, I could say, I know it. You could say it's information now. The brothers are those individuals who have obtained a degree of advancement over other humans. This also is number two. If you meet a brother and you get him alone and you say, I've noticed about you certain things and I want to ask if you are familiar with the Rosicrucians or the Masons or the Stell Group or the book, The Ultimate Frontier, or some of these metaphysical philosophies, you, when you ask, are allowing him to interfere in your environment. This is the teacher appearing when the student is ready. But unless you ask, the brothers won't help. And here's the crux, folks. Number two. Yes, the fifth level of intelligence is responsible for the direct work with the planet, and they can make mistakes. The story of Lucifer and Jehovah is a tale of the mistake made by the angelic intelligence. The argument between the angelic forces and the fifth level of existence is that Jehovah, according to my philosophy, believed that humans could advance with a perfect environment, so at first humans were given the Edenic state. All they had to do was eat bananas, sleep, chase the girls, make love, swim, sun, and sleep. But they didn't grow in that Edenic state. They were lazy. All they wanted to do was eat, drink, make love, and sleep some more. They didn't want to grow. So Lucifer said, we should help mankind grow. And you know the rules. We can't go down and do it for them, so we'll give them problems to overcome. And zap, like the thunderbolts of Zeus, Eden was gone, and we now have winters in Chicago, and man has to overcome. Now, folks, I don't care if this man worships Lucifer. I don't care if he believes what he believes or belongs to the mystery school. You all know me. I believe in the Constitution and we all have a right. But when he deceives and manipulates all of us, and when on June 8, 1993, on Radio Free America, he said to the world that I am a CIA disinformation agent and it's time that you knew who this man really is. I want you to track down and read these books that he wrote, The Great Pyramid, Man's Monument to Man, New York, Pinnacle Books, 1975. The Life and Death of Planet Earth, New York, Pinnacle Books, 1977. Psychic Surgery, 1973, reprint edition, Chicago, Pocket Books, 1975. The entire text of the interview you heard tonight can be found in a book called 5-5-2000, Ice, the Ultimate Disaster, by Richard W. Noone, spelled N-O-O-N-E, and he was the interviewer number one.
Folks, research the history of Willis Cardo. Research the history of the Liberty Lobby. And specifically, Radio Free America.
Tom Valentine has been a member of the Stell Group for most of his life. He has also been closely connected to the Communist Party by his own admission. Wake up! The members, the high priests of the mystery schools, are enacting ordo ab chaos. Create enough chaos. And then they can step up and take control and establish order, the New World Order. Now you know why on Radio Free America Tom Valentine gets so angry when someone questions Freemasonry. Now you know why he covers for the secret societies and for Freemasonry. And now you know why he's attacked me, because I am the enemy of Mystery Babylon.
And there you have it, folks. And yes, there you do have it. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to read to you a letter that I received today, talk about synchronicity, from my good friend in Tucson, Arizona, A. Ralph Epperson. He says, and I quote, you might enjoy letting your listeners know about a quote I just found in a book entitled Legenda of the Ancient and Accepted Scottish Rite of Freemasonry for the Southern Jurisdiction of the United States, written by Albert Pike. This book was written by Mr. Pike in 1888, 3 years before he died, and was published by the 33rd Degree Council when they were in Charleston, South Carolina. This quote should settle the question once and for all as to who the god is that the Masons worship in their lodges. Here in Tucson, one of their lodges is called a cathedral, and another is called a temple, two words describing places of worship. This quote will prove concretely that the god they worship is not the god of the Bible. I have been looking for this book by Pike for many years and presumed that it was out of print because I couldn't locate a copy. However, I knew it was not forgotten because Rex Hutchins, then a 32nd degree Mason, but who later became a 33rd degree Mason, quoted from it in his Masonic book entitled A Bridge to Light. So I considered it fortunate when I found that a publisher of out-of-print and rare books called Kessinger Publishing Company in Kela, Montana, had reprinted it. It is their claim that Legenda is a series of monographs intended to supplement the ritualistic instruction of the book written by Mr. Pike called Morals and Dogma.
As you know, the first 10 words of the Bible are found in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, and are, quote, "In the beginning God created the heaven and the earth," unquote. That means that in the time before there was something, there had to be nothing. So God created something out of nothing when he created the universe, or there would not have been a need for a beginning. But Mr. Pike does not agree. This is what he says on page 109 of Legenda in his explanation of the 28th degree. Quote, "Nothing is produced from nothing, because existence can no more cease to be than nothing can cease not to be. To say that the world came forth from nothing is to propose a monstrous absurdity. Everything that is proceeds from that which was, and consequently nothing of that which is can ever not be." The letter I in the word is was capitalized by Mr. Pike. It is customary to capitalize the first letter in the name of a deity or a noun that refers to a deity. Does this mean that he is making a deity out of matter? Well, folks, Lucifer is the god of the material world. So Mr. Pike says that those of us who believe in a God who created the universe out of nothing believe in a monstrous absurdity. The Christians and the Jews who believe in the God of the Old and New Testaments believe in a monstrous absurdity when they profess that their God created the universe out of nothing. Let there be no doubt, Pike told his readers that he and the Masons do not worship the Creator God. They worship a secret and concealed God in their cathedrals and temples who cannot create anything. In fact, Mr. Pike agreed with that statement. He wrote this about their, quote, "sun god," unquote, on pages 253 and 254 of Morals and Dogma. "I might remind you that Radio Free America is carried by the Sun Radio Network." Quote, "Amun, at first, the god of Lower Egypt, was the sun god. He created nothing," unquote. And to show that this is true, he repeated the idea on page 281. Quote, "The supreme being of the Egyptians was Amun, a secret and concealed god, the original light. He creates nothing," unquote. Yet he calls this god the supreme being. If the universe had two gods, one who created everything from nothing and one who created nothing, I would presume the first god who made everything, including the second god, would be superior to the second god who created nothing. So the only way you can resolve this problem, if you believe in this second God who created nothing, is to claim that there is no creator God. Then your God can then become the supreme being. And that is what Mr. Pike did. Make no mistake about it. The Masons do not worship the creator God, the God who made the world out of nothing. And that is why they have chosen to call their God the great architect of the universe. And that is why the Brotherhood in the ancient times was called the Builders and today are called Freemasons, or Freemasons in the French. It is known that architects do not draw plans to create a structure out of nothing. They design structures that must be built from existing materials or, if you will, out of materials that must be changed from one form to another before they can be integrated into a structure. The Masons worship some other being, one that they know can create nothing, and that includes the Stell Group. That includes the Ancient Order of the Rose and Cross, the Knights Templars, the Sovereign and Military Order of the Knights of Malta, and all of the rest of these skunks. The number one Mason of all time has said it, ladies and gentlemen, in his own writing. I have never claimed that Tom Valentine was a Freemason. I have only claimed what you have heard in this broadcast tonight, and I am sick of his stinking lies, and I am sick and tired of you stupid sheeple out there who cannot study or listen or repeat exactly what you hear, but have to make up some strange tale in order to cover your pathetic ignorance. Ladies and gentlemen, I do not attack people. I reveal them. I wish nobody ill will. I don't care what altar anyone worships upon. You are listening to a true constitutionalist who believes 100% in our right to protect us, the religion of our choice. I would fight for any one of you if that right were threatened to be taken away. Where I draw the line is when you lie, when you deceive, and when you manipulate the rest of us to pit us against each other so that you can bring about your silly, stupid utopia, your dream of 1,000 years of peace on this earth. You will never do it because you are mankind just like me and everyone else who you claim are nothing but cattle. And because you are man just like me and everyone else, you suffer for the same inherent failings that I and everybody else who lives upon this earth suffers from. You have the same temptations and the same greed, and you fight every day against these things. And to say that you are the only truly mature minds in this world, and that you are going to control the rest of us because we do not have the capability or the power to think for ourselves, is not only ludicrous, but is what eventually will bring you to your knees as we round you up and throw you in the jails and the prisons where you belong, and stop your wrecking of all the good that man has built upon the face of this earth. Don't pervert my words, because I'm the only one you'll ever hear on the radio who uses fact, who uses the own words of the people that I talk about, and I have no ulterior motive of trying to hurt anyone. The only reason for this broadcast and for me sitting here, ladies and gentlemen, is to wake the sheeple, empower the people, and try, like hell, to save freedom for not only this country, but for the entire world. Now, if you cannot understand what you heard tonight, then you are one of the most stupid ones out there. Those of you who are sheeple, who think you understood but aren't quite sure, but you believe that you are getting some meaning from what you heard tonight, you have a chance. And, of course, the rest of you, the people who have listened to the over 32 hours of the mystery series that we've aired on this program, you already know the truth. And you are the hope for the future in this nation. Ladies and gentlemen, I've said it before and I'll say it again. These people practice the Hegelian conflict, political resolution. And they control both sides of each conflict. Tom Valentine never said a word on his program about Freemasonry until I forced him to by my broadcasts. And if you don't believe that, you go back and listen to all the tapes. Remember, a nation or world of people who will not use their intelligence are no better than animals who do not have intelligence. Such people are beasts of burden and stakes on the table by choice and consent. Shortly after I originally ran this program, Tom Valentine came on with the master of the Stell Group and claimed that he became a Christian in 1968 and left the Stell Group forever. And that is a lie, because in the interview that you just heard, he claimed that he was loyal to the group to which he belonged, the Stell Group. That interview was conducted in 1976, and that book was published in 1982. I've said it before, I will say it again. Tom Valentine, you are a liar, and if you are not, sue me. We'll let a court of law determine it. I have all the evidence I need, mister. All of you out there listening, good night. And whether you believe it or not, I mean this from my heart. God bless you all.